This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Illinois State University and the University of Illinois had different approaches to the fall semester, but both have faculty unhappy with what went on.
We made them think they were going to come here and have maybe not a normal campus experience, but still a desirable campus experience, when what we really need them to do is so much more challenging and mentally taxing and distressing than what they could actually do.
A tale of two schools, plus here a candidate for McLean County Board in District 2 make the pitch for votes, and game design and interdisciplinary elements are part of the new creative technology major at Illinois State University. All that and a news update on the way. This is Sound Ideas on WGLT.
Support for the Sound Ideas podcast comes from WGLT listeners. Join the community of informed news consumers who listen to WGLT and also support it financially. Learn more about how you can support WGLT's nonprofit public service mission at WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Let's run down some of the day's top stories. Governor J.B. Pritzker says in the wake of the grand jury decision in the Breonna Taylor case, his top priority is to keep Illinois residents safe. Pritzker put Illinois National Guard members in a state of readiness before the announcement in Kentucky.
For anybody who would take to the streets, I would suggest that we will protect their right to free speech. We will protect their right to protest. But we will also stand against anyone who is intending to loot or intending to cause violence or to cause mayhem.
During a news conference, Pritzker said Breonna Taylor was an innocent woman gunned down in her own home and called the circumstances of her death terrible and frightening. A record high number of people are in the hospital with COVID-19 in McLean County. There are 12 people hospitalized right now, with two in intensive care. That's the most for the county since the pandemic began. Hospitalizations are a lagging indicator, often behind new cases by about a week. The county says its supply of critical care beds remains healthy. Bloomington Normal's bus system will continue free rides through the first week in November. The Connect Transit Board has suspended fare collections on fixed route and mobility paratransit services through November 9th as part of its response to the pandemic. That makes about 9 months of free rides so far. Connect Transit estimates the October loss of fares at nearly $81,000. Some private investors in McLean County have helped the Central Illinois Regional Airport land nonstop flights to Detroit starting next month. McLean County Chamber of Commerce CEO Charlie Moore says the Chamber's Community Air Service initiative started in 2012 to help the airport attract more service. It has provided $100,000 to help secure a federal grant to cover financial losses if Delta Airlines' new service underperforms.
Our investors felt so strongly about the ability to assist in future air service opportunities that we maintained a fund for the next initiative that was right for our community. I'm pleased to say that that next opportunity has landed.
The Chamber secured public funding from Bloomington Normal in McLean County when the program began, but returned that money years ago. Demolition has officially begun at the O'Neill Pool on the west side of Bloomington after months of delays. The city will replace the nearly half-century-old pool with another pool or a larger aquatic center. The city has not decided the scope and timeline of the new project, but is interviewing design firms for it. This is Sound Ideas on 89.1 FM WGLT and WGLT.org. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Two public universities in Illinois, located less than an hour drive away from each other, are taking two very different approaches to reopening for the fall semester. One is testing and retesting students and staff throughout the semester, while testing for COVID-19 at the other campus is limited. Lee Gaines with Illinois Newsroom starts the story on the campus of the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign.
Marissa Hardwick just got tested for COVID-19 inside a big white tent. She says collecting enough spit to take the saliva test can be a challenge, especially when you can't drink or eat anything for at least an hour before.
I like sour candy, so that's why I always think about like sour stuff. It makes my mouth salivate. So
Hardwick is a senior majoring in kinesiology. She's impressed by the university's massive testing program. Faculty, staff, and students have to get tested at least once a week in order to enter campus buildings, twice a week for undergrads. So far, the U of I has conducted hundreds of thousands of COVID-19 tests with a positivity rate of less than 1%. But Hardwick is not surprised there are currently around 2,000 cases of COVID-19 on this campus of roughly 35,000 students living in the area and more than 13,000 faculty and staff members.
It's not a quiet school. You know, it's known for being a party location.
That may be why there are already more than twice as many COVID-19 cases on campus than what university researchers predicted for the entire semester. University officials blame the rise in cases on student behavior. Others, like anthropology professor Catherine Clancy, blame the university. She says the school didn't account for student behavior when they created their reopening plan.
We made them think they were going to come here and have maybe not a normal campus experience, but still a desirable campus experience, when what we really need them to do is so much more challenging and mentally taxing and distressing than what they could actually do.
Administrators placed students on temporary lockdown earlier this month, and so far it seems to be working. Daily case numbers have declined, but the total number of cases remains high compared to other universities and colleges nationwide. So far, though, university officials remain confident in their testing program. U of I epidemiologist Rebecca Lee Smith says the campus's testing program is the envy of other universities, who she says are testing mostly symptomatic people.
The majority of our cases are asymptomatic. So the number of cases we have is the iceberg. They have the tip.
About an hour drive away, there's another public university which has taken a different approach to testing on its campus. Dana Vollmer from member station WGLT in Normal picks up the story.
Since it reopened, Illinois State University has had about 1,400 positive COVID-19 test results on its campus of about 18,000 students living in the Bloomington-Normal area. Unlike the U of I, COVID-19 testing at ISU was optional until just last week when the school announced that it will require students to get tested soon, but it's unclear when or how that will happen. Mary Closer is a junior at ISU. She says she and her friends are taking COVID-19 seriously, but some of her classmates aren't being as careful.
They're kind of like ruining it for everyone else.
Eduardo Monk is a freshman, one of the nearly 3,800 living in a dorm. He says he's careful about mask wearing. Still, he doesn't think college students have much to worry about if they do get the coronavirus.
And really, I'm not going to limit myself a whole lot. Again, I can't put my whole entire life on pause. There's a million more things I could die from just stepping outside my door.
ISU President Larry Dietz says most students are following the rules, and he says the university's COVID-19 numbers don't tell the whole story.
The truth is, many state universities don't test nearly as much as Illinois State does, and they don't transparently report positive cases as does ISU. Other universities test so often that their positivity rates skew lower through simple division.
So far, Illinois State University has conducted about 8,000 COVID-19 tests.
The University of Illinois, more than 300,000. Sarah Kobe is an epidemiologist at the University of Chicago. She calls ISU's optional testing program problematic.
To be fair, it is also the mode for basically every state and other large institution I know, which is, you know, allow testing, report those test results, but not enable testing in the way that allows us to understand trends in transmission, you know, really well. So, I mean, it's unquestionably risky.
Kobe says schools need to test students and staff every few days to catch the virus before it can spread. Without that kind of systematic surveillance testing, she says you can't really tell how many people are infected. And while Kobe calls the testing program created by the University of Illinois impressive, she says the school could have done a better job accounting for student behavior and how that might affect the spread of the virus.
And so I think a lot of boxes had to be checked, you know, to do this safely. And I don't think any university has really checked all of them.
Kobe says if university and college administrators had anticipated the magnitude of what's at stake and what it would take to open safely, more might have chosen not to bring students back to campus at all. I'm Lee Gaines.
And I'm Dina Vollmer.
WGLT's Katrina Peterson contributed to the report. This is Sound Ideas on 89.1 FM WGLT and WGLT.org.
Welcome to WGLT Election 2020 coverage. Throughout the campaign season, we are conducting interviews and forums with the candidates in different races. Today, we talked to Democrat Jeff Bertrand, who's running in McLean County Board District 2. That includes communities such as Hayworth, Downs, and Leroy, and much of southeastern McLean County. The Republican incumbent in that district is William Friedrich. He has declined to participate in this forum or any interview with WGLT. Democrat Jeff Bertrand is a first-time candidate for office. He works at State Farm and lives in Hayworth. So, Jeff, why are you running for county board?
It was a really simple thing for me. I do a lot of volunteer work around town, whether it be the caboose, opening it up for kids. Yesterday I was cooking breakfast up at the American Legion. And I just have always felt this cold sense of representation. Like, I never see our reps out and about. I never see them anywhere. And it would just be nice, I think, for somebody like me to represent the people. Because I am out there. I am willing to get my hands dirty. I'm willing to help the community. And I think that that's something that everyone in this community and the surrounding communities of District 2 would be very receptive to. So that was my main focus, is giving some of the power back to the people rather than just having somebody just go in and vote their way without really ever hearing from any of us. So that's my reason.
What would be the issues that'll be most important to you if you're elected?
Well, I've always been really passionate about when you look at things like the opiate crisis, and you just look at, well, you're going to get locked up for a year, and that's somehow going to cure you, and it just isn't, and that affected me in a previous community, not personally, but I saw it around me. And I just never thought that that was a good avenue. So if I could ever have an outlet to discuss those kinds of things, that would mean a lot to me. I also think as a community, as a whole, the whole county, we could do a better job with recognizing mental health issues. And instead of having a policeman come over to, you know, diffuse a situation, have somebody that actually is trained to discuss those things with you and try and find you some actual help rather than just having your door be a revolving door where a policeman has to stop by and calm you down all the time. So that is something that is also a passion of mine.
The McLean County Board is a bit of an unusual beast in that it is partisan. So if you're elected, you get a D, an R, or an L next to your name. So why are you a Democrat, Jeff?
I'm a Democrat. I grew up in a union household. Many, many union households, you will find that they side with the Democratic Party because the Democratic Party, a lot of times to me, supports the employee, not just the employer. Outside of that, I've always had a sense, you know, especially in the social media age, where you see people that they want to cut cost and they want costs down. And the way that they go about doing it is, well, if the program doesn't help me, then it's not needed. Whereas, you know, I can take a look at something and, yeah, it may not directly affect me, but it could be a program that helps someone else, whether it be housing, affordable housing, or things like that. You know, those are the things you always see on a chopping block when it comes to pretty much the Republican side, where I could never take that stuff away because I feel that that stuff is needed. That being said, I can have a conversation, a level-headed conversation with any Republican, and explain my viewpoints, and a lot of times come away and I have learned something from their side as well. So I think that that would be a very good attribute on the board, where I'm not going to write someone off just because they have an R or an L in front of their name, and I'm not going to just blindly follow someone because they have a D after their name.
What grade would you give the McLean County Health Department so far in its handling of the pandemic? And then if you are elected, what would you do to support the needs of the health department at this time?
Well, Honestly, the grade I would give is it's about average right now. I say about a C. I think that they've done some good things. I think that they've also taken some steps backwards as far as, you know, we've got ISU back open and a lot of the board members are just chomping at the bit to get everything back open. And I understand where they're at. I do. I have a lot of friends that own small businesses that have been affected by this. But at the same time, you know, we need to look at what the effect will be if we just, we're going to go back to normal, we're going to do it tomorrow, and this is what's going to happen, because we've obviously seen with ISU and the spark in cases that maybe that's not the best way to go about it. There needs to be, at the state level, really more of a focus on telling these folks that are so affected how to get assistance and how to go through that. And if the county board was able to help with assisting to get them to the right resources, I don't necessarily think that they've done a lot of that. And then just watching a lot with contact tracing, and the results have gotten much faster. I got a COVID test just because on Friday, and I had my results back. I got it Friday at 12:21, and I had my results back on Saturday. So I think the overall response in some areas is good, but there needs to be a little bit more of just overall leadership that doesn't just dictate on money and money lost, money made. We need to look at how do we get through this? And my belief is the fastest way through this is to combat it by distancing. And if that means some of these places are affected by it, we need to do a better job of telling them where the resources are, because there are resources available to assist them.
If you're elected, there may be times where a business comes before the county board and asks for incentives to either move into the area or to expand. So how would you go about making decisions, you know, about when it's appropriate to give tax breaks, for example?
How many jobs are going to be created, and not only how many jobs are going to be created, but local jobs. You know, we've all seen the articles recently with Rivian and hiring people from outside of the area. I spent 14 years as an outside sales rep for lumber yards, and I've seen the effect of the slowing down of the building industry, and would love to find any way that we could stimulate that. But it's not just a blind attempt at, well, here, you're going to come to town, let's just write you a blank check from the county and move on with our day. We need to really look at what is it going to do as far as job creation for our community, for our area. And it, honestly, if it came down to it and it was going to create jobs, I most certainly would support a tax incentive program to help those businesses be enticed to come to McLean County rather than go to a surrounding county or possibly even a different state.
Earlier in the interview, you mentioned the importance of mental health, and especially in the context of when someone interacts with the police. I mean, so up until now, the county has made some pretty good progress on mental health services. What should come next? What's the next kind of step in that evolution?
I'd like to see more boots on the ground, more people that are able to be out where, you know, I'm sure that people that are affected by some sort of mental illness, maybe there's a stigma with actually having to go drive to an office and walk in. But, you know, if there was a way for it to be accessible at your home in a more private setting, I could see that being something that may help someone that was previously unwilling to get that help because of the stigma involved. Maybe somebody will see their car in the parking lot, or, you know, just those kinds of things.
Jeff Bertrand, Democrat running for county board in District 2. What else should we know about you?
I mean, I'm definitely family first. I'm a father of one. My daughter started preschool today. which was an exciting day. And really, honestly, I just hope people give me an opportunity to tell them about myself rather than just writing off, well, there's just a Democrat, because that's not the only way I would ever identify myself. I identify myself as a listener and somebody that is willing to listen to all points of view to make a decision.
That's Democrat Jeff Bertrand speaking with Ryan Denham. Bertrand is running for McLean County Board in District 2, which includes Hayworth, Leroy, and Downs. Republican incumbent William Friedrich declined to participate in this forum or any interview with WGLT. Hear all our election coverage at WGLT.org or online at the WGLT YouTube channel. The Arts Technology Program at Illinois State University is leveling up with a new name and a new approach. Majors can now do game design or study interdisciplinary technologies. WGLT's Katrina Peterson talks with Director Aaron Pellucci and Assistant Professor John Chengun of the newly named Creative Technologies Program about the changes. Pellucci lays out some of the major differences.
They're emphasizing design and practice in the integration of digital technologies and fine art, and they'll be taking digital media courses in fields such as video, sound, electronic music, music production, gaming, motion graphics, web, and computer programming concepts.
Now, with ISU esports and professional esports becoming exponentially popular, would you say the rebranded program caters to industry demand, Sir John?
A lot of gamers are now, they are watching a streamer as they are playing a game and whatnot. So all these online communities have become bigger and very pervasive. So obviously the industry is kind of moving that way, because now if you want to make a game, you have to think about, can my game be streamed? Can it be, playthroughed and uploaded to YouTube? And then obviously all these gaming communities that might form around your game becomes a part of your ecosystem, which encapsulates also esports. So now a game designer needs to think about all these issues in addition to the game, making the game that they are making engaging and fun to play. They have to think about how the game will interact with all these communities too.
Sir John, being that you work closely with student projects and published works, what platforms does this new program offer to inhibit those efforts?
Some students, they focus on making games that are really high fidelity. They might not be as original ideas. For example, you will see a car racing game, which is, it's not a very original idea. It's like we have seen a lot of them. But they kind of focus it from the perspective of making it look really good, like a technical perspective. And some projects, they actually approach it from finding interesting ideas. Here you will see a game where you are playing a Sasquatch trying to scare away campers, which is like an environmentalist issue and like message around it. There are a lot of games that came out even in 1 year. Again, some of them approach it from a technical perspective. Some approach it from an innovative perspective, and I welcome them both, because industry can use both of these angles.
How are game design students in this program different from students in other programs? Aaron?
What we're trying to do is build all three pillars out. And what I mean by that is design, production, and development. And, design is establishing the look and feel, the sound, the navigation, the ideas of the game. Production is building the assets, and development is weaving it all together through game engines and programming. A lot of programs nationally and internationally that are doing some form of game are focusing more in one of those areas. They're really good at design, or they're really good at production, or they're really focused on development. But we have the capabilities and the range of skill sets to really heavily hit design and production. And where we might not be as strong in the development area, we're building a partnership with the School of Information Technology, where they have a bunch of serious student programmers. And where we go into game engines, they go into raw coding. and building a bridge there is going to help us really flesh out the development side of things. Our partnership with esports and our intercollegial partnership with the School of Information Technology. And these are all things that aren't fully established yet, but we're building towards sort of creating a game design and production and development program that provides a way in for students with a huge variety of interests.
Katrina Peterson talked with Director Aaron Pellucci and Assistant Professor John Shengun of the newly named Creative Technologies Program. Game design is an increasingly popular major and area of study nationwide. The Creative Technologies Program also intends to offer internship opportunities within 2 years. Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT Normal, made possible with listener contributions at WGLT.org. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Our website is also where you can find Sound Ideas interviews and stories. This is WGLT, Bloomington Normal's public media.